President Trump will be speaking from the Rose Garden shortly. He's expected to declare a national emergency to try and secure funding for his long-promised southern border wall. This comes after Congress passed a border security compromise that provides $1.375 billion for new border fencing. This was far short of the $5.7 billion the president had wanted for his wall. I'm joined in the studio by NPR national security correspondent David Wellna. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Rachel.
Is there a definition of what a president can declare a national emergency for?
There is not. Congress has never said exactly what constitutes a national emergency. The other thing is that Congress has never overturned a national emergency decree, even though they theoretically have the power to do so through a joint resolution. This is something that Congress has provided for presidents. There are more than 400 statutes that lie dormant until a national emergency is declared. Then they're activated, the president has to say which ones he's going to use, and then he can go ahead and use them. And there's really nothing that Congress can say about it at that point.
We've got NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley on the line as well. Scott, declaring this national emergency, though, this flies in the face. It directly contradicts what Congress said and how much money they allocated for this. So the national emergency undermines the very bill the president is expected to sign, right?
Well, that's right. The president said all along that he wanted to get the wall funding he sought through the congressional process. But when he was ultimately unsuccessful, they used this emergency declaration as a stopgap measure. Now, the White House is downplaying just what a reach this is. But obviously there are congressional critics, certainly Democrats, but even some Republicans who do see this as the president overstepping his constitutional authority.
And setting some kind of precedent that Republicans wouldn't necessarily like if the shoe was on the other foot, right? If a Democratic president comes to power, said president could then declare a state of emergency for any kind of liberal agenda item, climate change or gun control.
That is the argument that the opponents of this move are making. The White House might phrase it differently, and ultimately the courts will have a chance to weigh in, I suspect.
David, President Trump still has to find this money from somewhere. It doesn't just magically appear if he declares a national emergency.
Right.
Where's it going to come from?
Well, White House officials say it will come from three sources. Two of them are not subject to really a national emergency decree. He could have used them in any case. One of them is $600 million from the U.S. Treasury from drug forfeiture seizures. Another one is from the Pentagon's drug interdiction programs. That's $2.5 billion. He could reprogram that money without declaring a national emergency. The biggest chunk of money is going to come from military construction programs, and that is an authority that he's invoking through decreeing a national emergency. That's $3.5 billion. You add that all up and fold in the money that Congress is offering for the border, that comes to be about $8 billion. That's considerably more than the $5.7 billion that he had been holding out for.
Right. So I guess, Scott, the rationale there is the president thinks if I'm going to declare a national emergency, I might as well, you know, swing for the fences.
I don't think he's really going any bigger, though, than the 6.7 that he'd been asking for, or the 200 that was supposed to build.
$5.7
billion that he was asking for, which was supposed to build about 230 plus miles of border barrier. I don't think they're moving the goalpost on how much fence they want to build. I think they just want to have some wiggle room with these various accounts, and that's why they've identified some $8 billion and change in the couch cushions over the Defense Department that they can tap into.
Is this going to go to the courts, Scott Horsley?
Almost surely. We have had a number of members of Congress who've talked about that. We've also had the Attorney General of California, who delivered the Spanish language response to the President's State of the Union address. And in that response, Javier Becerra made no secret of the fact that he was ready to go into court just as soon as the president took this action. And, of course, if he does so, that would be a case filed in Trump's favorite federal circuit, the Ninth Circuit.
And a question that raises is what would be the legal standing of the California Attorney General or of members of Congress to challenge this national emergency decree? They have to show that they are somehow being harmed by what's being done, personally harmed. And there's thinking that maybe Congress would end up joining a third party lawsuit, for example, somebody on the border whose land is being expropriated appropriated by the government to build a wall, might challenge that in court, and the Congress could join such a suit. But there is a question about what would be the legal standing of either the Attorney General or Congress to challenge this.
Mm-hmm. Critics of this have pointed out to the exceptional nature of it, that it's essentially an end run around Congress. Congress said, you can have this much money and spend it this way, and the president is seeking a national emergency to counter that. Is that in and of itself unprecedented, David?
Well, no, it's not in the sense that other presidents have used national emergency powers. White House officials point out that President George H.W. Bush used the military construction authority in 1990 during the Gulf War, and his son, George W. Bush, used it in 2001 after the 9/11 attacks. And they say, so this is not really breaking any kind of new precedent.
But they weren't specifically doing so in the face of what Congress had voted for.
Exactly. This was not in defiance of Congress. This was in response to a wartime situation. What we have now is a president wanting to build something on the border and saying that there's an emergency there. And you have Congress saying, we don't think that there's that much of an emergency that it deserves the amount of money you sought from us, and we're only going to give you so much. And a White House official this morning said, you know, he said, yes, this does technically go beyond the appropriations bill. He said it's outside the ordinary appropriations process, and that's why the 1976 National Emergencies Act is on the books.
A reminder, you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We're waiting for President Trump to enter the Rose Garden, where he is expected to declare a national emergency in order to acquire the funding he would like in order to build a border wall between the United States and Mexico. We are joined by Josh Blackman. He's an associate law professor at South Texas College of Law in Houston. Josh, thanks for being here. May I ask you, what do you understand to be the legal threshold for a president to declare a national emergency?
Congress long ago made the threshold quite low. And in fact, since 1991, Congress has enacted a statute that allows the Secretary of Defense to, quote, construct fences along the international border. So we've had laws in the books for nearly three decades that give the president the power to move money around, and other statutes will allow him to construct roads and fences near the border. The problem is not what Congress did today. The problem what Congress did in the past, and they gave basically President Trump a lot of authority, which he seems now planning to use, and there are not many strings attached to that authority.
Hmm. So then what would be your reading of future lawsuits if House Democrats decide that they're going to fight this in the courts? I mean, do they have a case?
The easiest way for House Democrats to stop this is by passing a resolution and then overriding the president's veto. If they fail to do it, I think it's going to be difficult to tell a court, well, we couldn't do it the democratic process, so the courts try and stop it. I think the far more likely plaintiff to challenge this will be property owners whose land will be seized by eminent domain, or perhaps the state of California, which does own some of the land near the border. I think either of these plaintiffs will be much better than the House of Representatives.
I want to bring in Scott Horsley again, a White House correspondent who can look at this through a political lens, because there are those who would argue that this is not a national emergency, but it is a political emergency for President Trump.
Right. I mean, building this wall was a promise that Trump made repeatedly throughout the 2016 campaign. Of course, at the time, he always said that Mexico was going to pay for it. Mexico has been very clear they're not going to pay for it. He didn't really work very hard during the first 2 years when he had a Republican majorities in both the House and Senate to demand that they fund the border wall. Until just before Christmas, when he kind of surprised everyone, including his own GOP colleagues, and said he wouldn't sign the spending bill that didn't include what he perceived as adequate wall funding, and we had a 35-day government shutdown. Now, throughout that period, the president has gone on the road. He's campaigned in El Paso. He's campaigned in McAllen. He's made this a focus of his State of the Union speech. He delivered a primetime speech from the Oval Office to try to sell the American people on the notion that there is either a security crisis or a humanitarian crisis on the border that warrants spending billions of dollars to build at least a portion of the wall, some 200-plus miles of wall. And he hasn't managed to do that. We've just had a congressional committee now that spent the last 3 weeks trying to work up a compromise. They did, and they basically came in with the same number they'd had all along. So he hasn't been able to make the sale to the broad swath of the American people. What he's really doing is playing to that narrower portion of the electorate for whom this wall is an important promise that he wants to deliver on, or at least he wants to be seen doing everything in his power to deliver
on. Right. I mean, now he gets to say, even though he didn't seal the deal on a congressional piece of legislation, he gets to say, I'm fighting Congress. He gets to tell his base that, look at those inept guys who don't really know what's going on. I'm standing up to them. And that works for him, at least with margin of his supporters.
It does help him with his base, although I'm not sure he really needs a lot of help with his base. He's had, you know, very robust support from his base all along. They haven't really wavered very much. And it's probably costing him with independent voters and certainly Democrats who have no love for this president anyway. What we saw during the period of the government shutdown, the 35 days, the 5 weeks when portions of the government were shut down and federal employees were either furloughed or forced to work without pay, was that the president's approval rating went down rather dramatically.
Right.
And then when they reopened the federal government and we had a sort of return to normalcy for the last 3 weeks, accompanied by some also positive economic news, the president's approval rating went back up. So going into the breach again like this will certainly be catnip to Trump's most hardcore supporters, but I suspect he may pay a price with the broader electorate.
Yeah, David.
You know, and the urgency of building a wall on the border could be questioned from the fact that last year Congress gave the Department of Homeland Security $1.375 billion for putting up barriers along the border.
The same amount they're offering up.
They are only breaking ground this month on using that money.
Huh.
And so making the argument that you need several times that much money may be a hard sell.
What are we hearing from law enforcement around the border, David? I mean, understanding that the border is a long, long place.
Yeah.
But when you talk to people who are there policing it on a day-to-day basis, do they say they need more physical barrier?
Well, I talked to Border Patrol agents along the border near Tijuana, Mexico, and San Diego. Those agents said, really, it's business as usual here. Really, we can handle what's going on. I was asking them about the presence of U.S. Marines who were some miles removed from the border, how much they needed them there. And they said, we're fine. We're getting along fine. I think maybe they were trying to also reassure me that they know how to do their jobs. But in terms of there being a crisis, you don't get that sense talking to these people on the border.
Mm-hmm.
And David, as you know, there's already substantial wall in places like San Diego, in places like
Indeed.
El Paso, in those more densely populated border cities where Congress in the past has felt like a wall was valuable. About between 600 and 700 mile of fencing already exists. And to what the Democrats would say is we built the fencing where it made sense and we didn't build it beyond that. And now the president's trying to build it beyond that.
I mean, Scott Horsley, this is another illustration of how this president is taking our entire country into places we haven't been before. I mean, there norms are things that in the Trump administration, I think it's fair to say those are bendable. They're not hard and fast. And this is another example of that. This may not be how presidents have typically used declarations of national emergency, but here we are.
That's right. And again, I mean, if this were genuinely an emergency, why didn't the president do this back before Christmas? I mean, if there was really that level of urgency.
Right. We have got NPR congressional correspondent Scott Detrow in the studio with us as well. Scott, what are you hearing from Democrats about how they're going to respond to this?
Democrats are very upset about this. They think this is an unconstitutional power grab, to only mildly paraphrase the statement that came out last night from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. I think we can expect them to use this legislative approach that hasn't really been tried before, where Congress can, as we've been talking about, try to override a presidential emergency declaration. Given the fact that Democrats have a large majority in the House of Representatives, I think it's safe to assume that if this happens, it would pass in the House and go to the Senate. Now, usually, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell can take a piece of legislation that would give him an uncomfortable vote and just never hold a vote on it.
Right.
That's usually the approach. But under the rules of this, he would have to hold a vote. And our understanding is that this is not something that would be subject to cloture, where you need 60 votes to go forward. Only a handful of Republicans would need to vote in favor of this for it to pass and go to the president's desk.
Are there a handful now who don't like it?
Well, there seem to be. That is a good question, because right now, I'll say this, right now there is a lot of Senate Republican skepticism about this move, but over the past 2 years, we can bring up countless examples where there's been a lot of Republican pushback, but then it comes to the vote and they end up siding with the president. So that's certainly one of the biggest things to watch over the next few weeks is this frustration from Republicans in terms of whether or not this is presidential overreach, but also thinking tactically down the line, could a future Democratic president do whatever she or he wants to declare a national emergency to get Democratic policies in place? There's a real concern from Senate Republicans about
right.
this.
And just a reminder, you're listening to special coverage from NPR. We are awaiting President Trump. He is expected in the next minute or so to come into the Rose Garden. This is where he is expected to announce a state of emergency, a national emergency, in order to procure the funding that he wants in order to build a border wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, do we know if the president, I'm putting you on the spot here, do we know if he has signed the compromise legislation out of the Congress yet?
No, I don't think it's been delivered to the White House yet. They expect that legislation to come to the White House sometime later today, and that the president has said he will sign it. He sent that message via Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday. Of course, they better get it signed by the end of the day, because the clock is ticking, and we would have another, albeit
right.
you know, just momentary government shutdown if it doesn't get to his desk before and signed by midnight.
Well, the optics on this aren't great if he hasn't signed it, right? Because Mitch McConnell himself said this is going to happen. The president will sign it. He's going to announce this national emergency, but at the same time, he's going to sign our bill.
Yeah, I think that was a move that Mitch McConnell felt he had to make yesterday, because Senate Republicans have felt repeatedly burned by President Trump throughout this process, going back to December when they passed that spending bill that did not include the wall funding he wanted on the premise that the president would sign that bill. He, of course, reversed course. We had a month-long shutdown. And as the week went on, and as Trump wasn't making a clear statement on whether or not he would sign this latest bill, there was a lot of uncertainty from Senate Republicans. So McConnell went on the floor before the vote, said the president says he will sign this, and it seems like this national emergency declaration was the cost that Senate Republicans, who don't really want to see that happen, had to pay in order to get the certainty and avoid another government shutdown.
But can I just ask here?
Sure.
What difference, thank you, Scott, what difference does Congress allocating $1.375 billion make at all? If the president is now declaring a national emergency, he could assign any number to the figure that he would solicit from the Treasury Department or the Pentagon.
I think that's a great question. And I think that the reason that he's doing this is that he feels, I'm not speaking for the president, but based on the broader political trends that we've seen over the last month over this fight, he's felt repeatedly frustrated that the money that he wants in order to both accomplish a goal and also save political face simply is not available. You saw this conference committee, including Republicans and Democrats, come out with a number that was smaller than the amount of money he would have initially gotten. And it was clear that no more money was available on Capitol Hill from a Republican Senate and a Democratic House.
David Wilna.
But this upsets the whole order of things in Washington. The president proposes and the Congress disposes, and the Congress holds the purse strings. So we're in uncharted territory.
Right. President Trump is now, he's exited the Oval Office. He's now approaching the podium in the Rose Garden.
A team of very talented people. In China, we've had a negotiation going on for about 2 days. It's going extremely well. Who knows what that means, because it only matters if we get it done. But we're very much working very closely with China and President Xi, who I respect a lot. Very good relationship that we have. And we're a lot closer than we ever were in this country with having a real trade deal. We're covering everything, all of the points that people have been talking about for years that said couldn't be done, whether it was theft or anything. The unfairness. We've been losing, on average, $375 billion a year with China. A lot of people think it's $506 billion. Some people think it's much more than that. We're going to be leveling the playing field. The tariffs are hurting China very badly. They don't want them. And frankly, if we can make the deal, it'd be my honor to remove them. But otherwise, we're having many billions of dollars pouring into our treasury. We've never had that before with China. It's been very much of a one-way street. So that's happening. And the relationship with China is very good. But I think they finally respect our country. They haven't respected us for a long time. Not for a long time. The UK and the US, as you probably have been seeing and hearing, we're agreeing to go forward and preserve our trade agreement. You know all of the situation with respect to Brexit and the complexity and the problems, but we have a very good trading relationship with UK, and that's just been strengthened further. So with the UK, we're continuing our trade, and we are going to actually be increasing it very substantially as time goes by. We expect that the UK will be very, very substantially increased as it relates to trade with the United States. The relationship there also is very good. We have a lot of great announcements having to do with Syria and our success with the eradication of the caliphate, and that'll be announced over the next 24 hours, and many other things. A lot of positive things are going on. We're working on a summit, and you know all about the summit. It'll be in Vietnam, Hanoi, and we'll be meeting in Hanoi. I think a lot of you will be going, I suspect. And I hope we have the same good luck as we had in the first summit. A lot was done in the first summit. No more rockets going up, no more missiles going up, no more testing of nuclear. Get back our remains, the remains of our great heroes from the Korean War. And we got back our hostages. But we hope we're going to be very much equally as successful. I'm in no rush for speed. We just don't want testing. The sanctions, as you know, remain. Everything is remaining. China's been helping us, and Russia's been helping us. And South Korea, I think you can say, has been we've been working very closely with South Korea, with Japan. But China, Russia on the border have really been at least partially living up to what they're supposed to be doing, and that's okay, as per the United Nations. So we will have a meeting on the 27th and 28th of February. And I think that will be a very successful one. I look forward to seeing Chairman Kim. We have also established a very good relationship, which has never happened between him or his family and the United States. They have really taken advantage of the United States. Billions of dollars has been paid to them. And we won't let that happen, but we think that North Korea and Chairman Kim have a tremendous potential as an economic force, economic power. Their location between South Korea and then Russia and China, right smack in the middle, is phenomenal. And we think they have a great chance for tremendous economic prosperity in the future. So I look forward to seeing Chairman Kim in Vietnam. Today I'm announcing several critical actions that my administration is taking to confront a problem that we have right here at home. We fight wars that are 6,000 miles away, wars that we should have never been in many cases, but we don't control our own border. So we're going to confront the national security crisis on our southern border. And we're going to do it one way or the other. We have to do it. Not because it was a campaign promise, which it is. It was one of many, by the way. Not my only one. We're rebuilding the military. Our economy is thriving like never before. You look at other economies, they're doing terribly, and we're doing phenomenally. The market is up tremendously today. Not that that's anything, but, you know, because I'll go back in and they'll say, oh, the market just went down. But the market is getting close to the new highs that we created. We We have all the records. We have every record. But we're getting close to that point again where we'll create new records. So our country is doing very well economically, and we've done a lot. But one of the things I said I have to do and I want to do is border security, because we have tremendous amounts of drugs flowing into our country, much of it coming from the southern border. When you look and when you listen to politicians, in particular certain Democrats, they say it all comes through the port of entry. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's just a lie. It's all a lie. They say walls don't work. Walls work 100%. Whether it's El Paso, I really was smiling because the other night I was in El Paso. We had a tremendous crowd. And And I asked the people, many of whom were from El Paso, but they came from all over Texas. And I asked them, I said, let me ask you, as a crowd, when the wall went up, was it better? You were there, some of you. It was not only better, it was like 100% better. You know what they did. But that's only one example. There are so many examples. In El Paso, they have close to 2,000 murders right on the other side of the wall. And they had 23 murders. It's a lot of murders. But it's not close to 2,000 murders, right on the other side of the wall in Mexico. So everyone knows that walls work, and there are better examples than El Paso, frankly. You just take a look almost everywhere. Take a look at Israel. They're building another wall. Their wall is 99.9% effective, they told me. 99.9%. That's what it would be with us, too. The only weakness is they go to a wall and then they go around the wall. They go around the wall and in. Okay? That's what it is. Very simple. And a big majority of the big drugs, the big drug loads, don't go through ports of entry. They can't go through ports of entry. You can't take big loads because you have people. We have some very capable people, the Border Patrol, law enforcement, looking. You can't take human traffic, women and girls. You can't take them through ports of entry. You can't have them tied up in the back seat of a car or a truck or a van. They open the door. They look. They can't see three women with tape in their mouth or three women whose hands are tied. They go through areas where you have no wall. Everybody knows that. Nancy knows it. Chuck knows it. They all know it. It's all a big lie. It's a big con game. You don't have to be very smart to know. You put up a barrier, the people come in, and that's it. They can't do anything unless they walk left or right, and they find an area where there's no barrier, and they come into the United States. Welcome. We've detained more people. Our border agents are doing such incredible work. Our military has been incredible. We put up barbed wire on top of certain old walls that were there. We fixed the wall and we loaded up with barbed wire. It's very successful. But our military has been fantastic, and I want to thank them. And it's very necessary. We've broken up two caravans that are on their way. They just are breaking. They're in the process of breaking up. We have another one that we haven't been able to break up yet. We've been actually working with Mexico much better than ever before. I want to thank the president. I want to thank Mexico. They have their own problems. They have the largest number of murders that they've ever had in their history. Almost 40,000 murders. 40,000! And they got to straighten that out, and I think they will. But I just want to thank the president because he's been helping us with these monstrous caravans that have been coming up. We had one that was up to over 15,000 people. It's largely broken up. Others have gotten through. And in Tijuana, you have a lot of people staying there. If we didn't have the wall up and if we didn't have the wall secured and strengthened, they would have walked right through. They'd be welcome to the United States. One of the things we'd save just a tremendous amount on would be sending the military. If we had a wall, we don't need the military because we'd have a wall. So I'm going to be signing a national emergency. And it's been signed many times before. It's been signed by other presidents. From 1977 or so, it gave the presidents the power. There's rarely been a problem. They sign it. Nobody cares. I guess they weren't very exciting. But nobody cares. They sign it for far less important things in some cases, in many cases. We're talking about an invasion of our country with drugs, with human traffickers, with all types of criminals and gangs. We have some of the greatest people I know. They've been with me from the beginning of my campaign, almost from the first week, the Angel Moms. Unfortunately, we have new Angel Moms. One incredible woman just showed me her daughter, who we're talking about, killed in the year of 18. I said, I haven't seen you before. She said, no, I'm new. I said, that's too bad. It's too bad. It's so sad. Stand up just for a second. Show how beautiful your girl was. Thank you. I have such respect for these people. Angel moms, angel dads, angel families. I have great respect for these people. These are great people. These are great people. They're fighting for their children that have been killed by people that were illegally in this country. And the press doesn't cover them. They don't want to, incredibly. And they're not treated the way they should be. They're fighting for other people because they don't want what happened to their children or husband or anybody. We have one young lady whose husband, please, stand up. Your husband was just killed in Maryland. Incredible man, just killed. Beautiful children won't be seeing their father again. These are brave people. These are people that are, they don't have to be here. They don't have to be doing this. They're doing it for other people. So I just want to thank all of you for being here. Okay, I really do. I want to thank you, incredible people. Last year, 70,000 Americans were killed, at least. I think the number is ridiculously low. By drugs, including meth and heroin and cocaine, fentanyl. Now, one of the things that I did with President Xi in China when I met him in Argentina at a summit, before I even started talking about the trade, it was a trade meeting. It went very well. But before I talked about trade, I talked about something more important. I said, listen, we have tremendous amounts of fentanyl coming into our country, kills tens of thousands of people. I think far more than anybody registers. And I'd love you to declare it a lethal drug and put it on your criminal list. And their criminal list is much tougher than our criminal list. Their criminal list, a drug dealer gets a thing called the death penalty. Our criminal list, a drug dealer gets a thing called, how about a fine? And when I asked President Xi, I said, do you have a drug problem? No, no, no. I said, you have 1.4 billion people. What do you mean you have no drug problem? No, we don't have a drug problem. I said, why? Death penalty. We give death penalty to people that sell drugs. End of problem. What do? We set up a blue ribbon committees. Lovely men and women. They sit around a table, they have lunch, they eat, they dine, and they waste a lot of time. So if we want to get smart, we can get smart. You can end the drug problem. You can end it a lot faster than you think. But President Xi's agreed to put fentanyl on his list of deadly, deadly drugs. And it's a criminal penalty, and the penalty is death. So that's, frankly, one of the things I'm most excited about in our trade deal. You want to know the truth? I think maybe there's no more important point. We're going to make billions of dollars with this trade deal. It's going to be great for our country and great for China, I hope. Their market's down close to 40%. Our market's way up. We've picked up, since my election, trillions of dollars of worth. Trillions, many trillions. And China's lost trillions of dollars. But I want it to be good for China, and I want it to be good for the United States. So we'll see what happens. China's coming here next week, by the way. They're coming home, the traders. And then China's coming here next week, and then I'll be meeting with President Xi at some point after that to maybe for some remaining deals, we'll make them directly, one-on-one ourselves. So we're going to be signing today and registering national emergency. And it's a great thing to do because we have an invasion of drugs, invasion of gangs, invasion of people, and it's unacceptable. And by signing the national emergency, something signed many times by other presidents, many, many times, President Obama, in fact, we may be using one of the national emergencies that he signed having to do with cartels, criminal cartels. It's a very good emergency that he signed, and we're going to use parts of it in our dealings on cartels. So that would be a second national emergency, but in that case, it's already in place. And what we really want to do is simple. It's not like it's complicated. It's very simple. We want to stop drugs from coming into our country. We want to stop criminals and gangs from coming into our country. Nobody's done the job that we've ever done. I mean, nobody's done the job that we've done on the border. And in a way, what I did by creating such a great economy, and if the opposing party got in, this economy would be down the tubes. You know, I hear a lot of people say, oh, well, but maybe the previous administration. Let me tell you, the previous administration, it was heading south and it was going fast. We would have been down the tubes. The regulations were strangling our country, unnecessary regulations. By creating such a strong economy, you just look at your televisions or see what's going on today, it's through the roof. What happens is more people want to come. So we have far more people trying to get into our country today than probably we've ever had before. And we've done an incredible job in stopping them, but it's a massive number of people. If we had the wall, it would be very easy. We would make up for the cost of the wall just at the cost of the fact that I would be able to have fewer people. We wouldn't need all of this incredible talent, some of whom are sitting in the first row. You wouldn't need all of this incredible talent. We would get thousands of law enforcement people, including Border Patrol. You put them in different areas. You have them doing different things. Law enforcement and Border Patrol. And I want to thank law enforcement, and I want to thank Border Patrol, and I want to thank ICE. ICE is abused by the press and by the Democrats. And by the way, we're going to be taking care of ICE. You know, we talk about the new bill. We're going to be taking care of ICE. They wanted to get rid of ICE. And the bill is just the opposite of that. A lot of good things happen. So that's the story. We want to have a safe country. I ran on a very simple slogan, make America great again. If you're going to have drugs pouring across the border, if you're going to have human traffickers pouring across the border in areas where we have no protection, in areas where we don't have a barrier,
we continue our special coverage from NPR News on President Trump's announcement of the national emergency. I'm joined by NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley, NPR national security correspondent David Wellna, and NPR congressional correspondent Scott Detrow. Scott Horsley at the White House, I want to start with you. What struck you after listening to the president's remarks there?
Well, what struck me is just what a rambling and disorganized presentation this was by the president, and that's sort of indicative of the way they have approached this quote-unquote emergency all along. It took the president almost 5 minutes to get to the emergency when he came out to the Rose Garden this afternoon, or this morning, rather. And, you know, that just shows the lack of urgency that's going on here. He spent the first 5 minutes of his speech talking about trade talks with China and growing trade with the UK. When he finally got around to talking about the purported emergency, he, as he often does, had some real whoppers. He was accurate about the number of drug overdose deaths we had in 2017, not last year. But it's not Democrats who insist that those drugs are mostly coming through ports of entry. It's the Drug Enforcement Administration. That's the federal government's own professionals say that's where the majority of those drugs, the vast majority of those drugs, come through. He, again, mischaracterized the crime record in El Paso, just as he did when he was there earlier in the week, to make and during his State of the Union speech, to try to make a case that a decade-old border fence in El Paso had cut down on crime in that city. In fact, violent crime had dropped sharply before the fence was built and actually increased slightly after the fence was built. So this is why the president has had so much trouble convincing the American people and Congress that some state of emergency exists that warrants spending these billions of dollars. His facts are wrong. His presentation is meandering. This is not going to help him convince independent voters who are on the fence here.
We actually have a clip of the president. This is where he is referring to how drugs get into this country and what he believes is an accurate characterization of that. Let's listen.
But one of the things I said I have to do and I want to do is border security, because we have tremendous amounts of drugs flowing into our country, much of it coming from the southern border. When you look and when you listen to politicians, in particular certain Democrats, they say it all comes through the port of entry. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's just a lie. It's all a lie.
Somebody's lying, and it's not the Democrats on this.
And you mentioned the stats. I'm going to have David Wilna's actually got them pulled up. I want to have you read those.
Yes. In fact, these are statistics that come from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Service, and these are statistics about drugs that are seized coming across the border. They say that 90% of heroin, 88% of cocaine, 87% of methamphetamines, and 80% of fentanyl in the first 11 months of last year was caught trying to be smuggled at legal crossing points. So I guess that the president is saying that his own Customs and Border Protection is lying about this, if he's to be believed.
NPR Scott Detrow, you cover Congress. How did that message from the president sit with Republicans and Democrats, do you think?
No, probably not well. Here's the political reality. President Trump made a decision to pick a high-profile fight and force a government shutdown over this issue of the border wall. He essentially caved to Democrats a few weeks ago. Their top demand was reopen the government and then we'll negotiate. So he agreed to reopen the government. They negotiated and he still didn't get what he wanted. So this was, in effect, a way to save face in a sense and say, I'm still getting my priority across. I'm still trying to build this wall. It was notable to me that he pointed out this was a campaign promise, but I had many other campaign promises as well.
Right. Almost trying to diminish the significance of the build the wall promise.
Right. And, you know, I covered his 2016 campaign. I went to a whole lot of rallies. I can't think of another promise that was a chant at every single rally throughout 2016. Certainly Lock Her Up was a chant at a lot of rallies as well. But this was a focal point of President Trump's bid for the White House. And he would always say, Mexico will pay for the wall. We are going to build a wall.
David Wilna, he's got to get this money from somewhere. We had been talking about that earlier. Can you remind us where the president thinks he's getting the remainder of these funds?
Three different sources, the White House officials say. One is asset forfeiture seizures from the Treasury Department, about $600 million. Another $2.5 billion from the Pentagon's counter-drug programs. Both of those pots of money he did not need to declare a national emergency to get. But the third pot of money, $3.5 billion from military construction projects. That's money that was appropriated for very specific things around the country at military bases. He does need to have a national emergency decree to use that money. Now, that money is about a third of the money that was allocated for military construction in FY 2019. So it's a big chunk.
NPR Scott Horsley at the White House. I'll finish with you. Where does this go from here? Some lawsuits, potentially?
I think that we were undoubtedly looking at legal challenges. We may be looking at a political challenge, although we've handicapped already, they're probably not the votes to override a presidential veto here.
Right.
But yes, we are definitely looking at a court fight.
You've been listening to special coverage as President Trump announces his declaration of a national emergency to secure as much as $6 billion to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border.